भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। As part of a lay ministry program that we've been doing here, the theme that we've been bringing up and discussions and readings have been around this last little while have been around the five hindrances, and I thought I would continue to speak about that, bring it up as a theme for reflection for this evening. It's one of the topics that, as teachers, we bring up fairly often, especially around concerning meditation. Or if you go to a retreat, almost certainly there'll be a talk on the five hindrances. Because that's that's what they are. They say hindrances to concentration, hindrances to clarity of mind, peace of mind, hindrances to happiness and well-being, and they're worthy of really reminding ourselves of them, because they come up in grosser or subtler ways at different times, or as we continue practice, they manifest in a variety of ways. So it's really good to have them clearly sort of pegged out what their territory is, so that one has a clear understanding. The five hindrances which the Buddha talked about are the sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and skeptical doubt. Those are the five. And there's many ways to talk about them, explain them, and say within the group, both of the lay people and when the monastics have been there, there's been a variety of explanations, similes, sutta readings. And they're, it's really being able to come at it from a variety of angles is helpful to get to see how they clearly how they work or what their what their characteristics are. I think that, you know, seeing things from, you know, particularly in something that is so common and ordinary, it's really good to, you know, to have a sense of doing readings, reflecting on it from different perspectives, different angles. It's just like today, working, trying to find a drain pipe that we'd buried about 4 years ago, digging in the earth. We actually dug in the earth. It's got this huge hole in the, you know, on the grounds. And found the point, but because there was so much rain, so much mud, we just had sort of one general sort of area. And today had to kind of redo it, refind it. So we could take measurements from different angles, different points, and you could really pinpoint exactly where it is. And you know, it's not that much that different in working with the mind. If you just a mood or a particular feeling or impression on its own, one needs to be looking at it from different angles, measuring it from different perspectives, in order to get a really true reading on it, true picture of it, and then. By that, then being it, by having that kind of real accurate perception of it, then one can see, okay, is this something to be relinquished? Is this something to be developed? Is this something to be just to be patient with and put up with? Then one can get a more clear sense of what the appropriate response is. So with the hindrances, just to be able to get a feeling for how does a hindrance manifest itself? Sensual desire. Agree. What does it feel like? And to be really attentive to that. Because sometimes what happens is we have some particular desire or the mind moving towards greed, and we really react out of aversion to it, and And then it starts to snowball, get even more complicated. One has desire, then one doesn't like the desire. So then there's aversion to the desire. Then because of aversion to the desire, then the mind sometimes either relinquishes the desire, but the relinquishment is out of fear rather than out of wisdom. Or one has aversion to the desire, then when the mind sort of digs its heels in and says, I don't care, I want it anyway. You know? I'm going to do it, I don't care what you say. You can't bully me around. So you see the mind sort of pushing and pulling. But that, say, this is the necessity or the helpfulness of just sort of saying, oh, that's sensual desire. That's what that feels like. That's how sensual desire works. And to really be attentive to that, and not in the sense of following it, but really being mindful, and by making that clear, that's what sensual desire is. That the mind gets drawn into something, it gets pulled, it gets fascinated with an object, it gets entranced by an object. It believes that particular object is really going to make one happy. If I caught that, if I experienced that, then I would be happy. And even if it's for a shorter or longer time, it's still this sort of problem. One is the mind is going out to it. It believes in that. And then by sort of really getting the feel, being attentive to the feeling, the movement of the mind, the kind of the absorption into an object or an idea of what one wants, then one sort of saying, oh, it never did satisfy, never did really gratify, never really made the mind peaceful. And that movement, that feeling of searching out, of grabbing, of holding on to, of wanting, is a feeling that one recognizes. Oh, that's it just doesn't lead to peace, and that's where it can be relinquished. Rather than by trying to sort of whip the mind into shape and beat it into submission, or try to live up to the ideal of being ascetic or restrained. I find for myself the more I try to force myself to be restrained, the more desirable things become. So just paying attention to the feeling. One of the images that Ajahn Chah used to use for desire, sensual desire, this Thai, and he was speaking in his own dialect, Laotian dialect, which is even more sort of to the point. And sometimes because it's a monosyllabic language, it can be really brief and to the point. And but what the image was is going around with one's mouth open all the time, looking for something to eat, looking for something to consume, so that image of just the insatiable sort of mouth seeking gratification. And and it feels like that when the mind is consumed by sensual desire. And of course it's not peaceful. So that getting going to the feeling, how one experiences the hindrances, how they feel in the body, how they feel in the heart, and that it's so important to clarify that in order to relinquish, in order to let go, because we tend to, again, we want to the mind is quick enough to recognize that one, that any of the hindrances are not really skillful, so one wants to relinquish them. One doesn't want to just follow them all the time. But when something is not experienced clearly, then that relinquishment tends to be out of, say, an idea or an ideal. And therefore it's not, it doesn't come from the heart really ready to let go. So that and just when holding something that's heavy and the mind sort of says, gee, this is heavy, I should let this go. The mind says, what do I do? What would I do without it? The mind is struggling but I really want this. But when it finally gets to the point of you feel, God, this is heavy, I just want to put it down. You put it down. And you don't want to pick it up again. Because the feeling is just too heavy. And the same with the moods of the mind. When we recognize this, oh, this is a burden to carry. Sensual desire, ill will, dullness, restlessness, doubt. These are a burden on the heart. They're a burden on the mind. To be really being really attentive to how they what they feel like. Then rather than either going to the justification of it, or the rationalization of it, or the expected result of it, which is sometimes it's not really clear anyway why we're following a particular mood. So that's why this cultivation of mindfulness and having certain labels or classification of mental states to sort of see, well, what is the mental state that I'm experiencing? Because if something isn't clearly seen, and felt and experienced, then it just continues to sort of trundle along under its own steam, kind of like a computer virus mutating and spreading through our system. That's what the, but when as soon as, say, a mental state is really seen clearly, it has a, one recognizes what it is, well, that is bringing mindfulness to it. And it has a, one's giving it an opportunity to cease, both to cease in terms of ending and ceasing to be a problem. Because as soon as it's seen clearly, felt, experienced, one is mindful of it, then it opens up a space around it for it to settle, to drop, for the mind to not hold on to it. You know, our tendency is so much to try to sort of letting go, not wanting to experience something, not wanting to experience something uncomfortable, unpleasant, to be able to be done with suffering, that yeah, we tend not to look at things closely enough. So just by you know, from this, they say, like from the Four Noble Truths of the Buddha, suffering is to be experienced, and the cause of suffering is to be let go of. And the tendency is to say, experiencing something, suffering in some way, whether the feeling of not being peaceful or not being unsettled or having some desire or some something that is agitating, and then wanting to let go of that, which is fair enough. But when it's not experienced fully and not seen clearly, then we tend not to be able to let go of the causes. The causes are still underlying things. So that need to see and experience something fully so that we can let go of the causes, let go of the root of things. Like in the forest, there's vines, like some of the poison oak grows in, I mean, it sort of grows in, I mean, it grows in different ways. It's really diabolical, but it grows like vines and goes, spreads out in different directions. Gets itself tangled up in different things, and if one just keeps sort of snipping away at the ends, then it just keeps growing. But if one tracks it back to, okay, where is it coming out of the ground, where is its roots, then you can just cut it at that point, and the rest of it will die off. Similarly, working with the mind, working in our meditation, to be drawing back to the roots, being giving yourself the time and space to be attentive to how we're experiencing the mind itself. What are the hindrances that are arising? How do they feel? How do they manifest? What does it feel like in the body? What does it feel like in the mind? What does aversion feel like? Usually we just want to either act on it, and there's that, again, that sort of either rejection of something, dislike that's aversive, pushing away, not wanting to experience, or we tend to stuff it down, and then there's this sort of seething sort of feeling of irritation and aversion that is, it's sort of pushing away as well, but it's just not wanting to experience and feeling. So that what does it feel like? And it's just so important to sort of to get that clear. That's aversion. As much as one can justify it, glorify it, bring some righteous angle into it, it's still aversion. And it's painful, and it creates separation and conflict. And whether one acts on it or not, it still feels like that. And there's a hindrance. It doesn't lead to, it isn't a wholesome state in itself, it doesn't lead to wholesome states. So it won't bring peace to the mind, just in its very nature. You look at it and you have to pay attention to what it feels like. And say, there's no way that I can ever make some sort of peaceful quality of heart out of this aversion, out of ill will. It's just not possible. Then the mind is very happy to relinquish. It's sort of, that's the option. Because when one continues to clarify and see, that's what it's like. You see, the options are to relinquish, let it go, allow the mind to be peaceful, or to continue suffering. Which does one want to do? As it becomes clearer and clearer, then there isn't an option. It's just that suffering is not an option. So that working with awareness and being willing to stay with the particular feelings, the hindrance of getting a clear sense of the feelings that arise, how it feels, dullness, sloth and torpor, wonderful words, sloth and torpor. I can feel that. One just doesn't want to put the energy in. One doesn't want to. One doesn't want to get up in the morning. or one doesn't want to sort of straighten the back in meditation. It's sort of there's a sinking feeling. And so they're really getting a feel for it, and that is, and you're, then you're sort of seeing what they say, the quality of mind that's associated with it, and what that feels like. Sometimes that, you know, sloth and torpor can be a nice option to, you know, the restless, you know, pain, restlessness, more extreme states of mind. We'll sort of willingly allow the mind to drift into dullness, because at least it's a break. But it's not a great option as you start to investigate it more. It doesn't have the, you know, those qualities of the wholesome mind, the kusala citta, the mind of wholesomeness. Are, you know, there's always an association of brightness and peacefulness, clarity. That's inherent in the mind that is let's say in accord with Dhamma, and it takes a certain effort, and it is hard, you know, getting that balance sometimes. The effort that it takes to maintain a brightness of mind, and then how it sometimes is say the effort is it's hard to put the effort in without sometimes being either turning to restlessness or the mind wanting to, because one energizes the mind and it wants to sort of go out and grab on to a mood of sensuality or distraction in some way or another. So the mind sinks again. So it's just working, balancing. But it's important to sort of, you know, how does it feel? What does it feel like when there's a freedom from sloth and torpor, and when that's present? What does it feel like? And the same with, you know, restlessness or doubt. You know, all of the, they have a particular tone to them, a certain feeling, how it's, you know, a felt sense of both internally of the mind, and then also how the body feels. You know, what does it feel like? Restlessness. I mean, you feel this agitation, doubt. You feel this sort of unsettledness. You know, what's the difference between sort of the agitation and unsettledness? And there's a difference in the feeling. So you're becoming familiar with that, and then also the. But I think also, you know, it's really important to be. When we're being attentive to the feeling of the hindrances, also recognizing that isn't the whole picture. So one of the problems of taking an object within the mind, then you start to define everything or experience everything from that perspective or from that feeling. You start looking for hindrances, and all of a sudden all you see is hindrances. God, my mind, all of it is desire. There's your will again. God, it's restlessness So then it starts sort of seeing hindrances everywhere. And on a certain level, that's useful or helpful to see what the mind is doing, is capable of doing. But, I mean, it's also not the whole picture. I mean, if we really had hindrances all the time, I mean, wouldn't be functioning. It's sort of kind of dysfunctional misfits. Sometimes it feels like that. But it's not really the picture. It's naturally in the human condition. There are times when the hindrances are there. There are times when there's not. So we're like actually becoming attentive to and familiar with the feeling of when there aren't, when isn't experiencing hindrances. What's it feel like when we don't have sensual desire? To actually look at something. Being in a situation, looking at something, and saying, "Yeah, I don't feel any sensual desire for that." Either an object or a person, and to actually, that's only arises sometimes, and then really becoming familiar with the feeling. Allowing it to sort of expand within consciousness. What's the body feel like as well? So when there isn't that present. And similarly with all the other hindrances. It isn't as if we feel ill will all the time, or aversion, or dullness, or doubt, or restlessness. But oftentimes we're not attentive to it. We don't recognize it as not being it. So in particular in meditation, as we're paying attention to the breath and our meditation object and settling the mind, to really clarify the feeling of non-involvement or non-engagement with the different hindrances, so that these are two parts of an exercise or two parts of a way to work with the mind. The one of sort of really clarifying how one feels or experiences the hindrance so that it seems clearly. But then also really paying attention to when they're not experienced, when they're not there. So that there's a clarification of the, say, the mind that is settled, is clear, is still. Or even if there's movement of mind, thought coming up. I mean, not every thought is a hindrance. It's just a thought. Not every feeling is problematic, in which it's just a feeling. It's just arising, establishing itself, and passing away. And it's really important to see that, because we tend so often to try to not think or not experience or not feel, because we think it's just an obstacle to my meditation, to my peacefulness. And the same as that's very much so for meditation, and the same, exactly the same for contact with the world around us. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. They're just thoughts and smells, impressions. I mean, that's all they are. But I mean, we tend to either feel intimidated by them, or attracted by them, or confused by them, and the mind just keeps spinning. To really bring attention to, okay, that's that particular thought, that feeling, that sound, that's all it was. Sound arising, just a mental object arising, establishing itself, and it passes away. So working with clarifying that is to say the work of mindfulness, and the function of awareness and attention. Keep bringing that back. It is helpful to have those different points of reference, say like the hindrances, as a point of reference for being able to plot out and get a more clear sense of our internal world and how we relate to the world around us. So in that way, it's just helpful to, when something is seen clearly, experienced clearly, felt clearly, then it's just so much easier to really let go, to drop it, to not get caught in the proliferation of the mind that keeps spinning things out. And that's the point of all the practice, is to be able to let things go, to put things down. It's letting go, it's putting it down with Dhamma in the heart, with clarity in the heart, with peace in the heart, and the quality of fundamental well-being and contentment in the heart, rather than either letting go through desire or aversion. Because in that way, if it's through just letting go out of an ideal or desire or aversion, the causes haven't been dealt with. It hasn't been seen clearly. And it just keeps coming up. Taking some kind of soft clay or something and then squeezing it, and it doesn't sort of get, just keeps popping out its different gaps in your fingers and your hands. It'll find a way out. The same in the mind will do the same thing. If one is trying to force it, just trying to find a way out. Whereas if there's that quality of spaciousness and awareness, then there'll be a point of settling and cessation. So that is it's natural. The mind, its innate peacefulness or stillness is at that point of cessation, letting go. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.